Hello, and welcome to WESN's newest radio show, The Map Is Not the Territory, with me, your host, Francis Steinman. The Map Is Not the Territory is sponsored in part by the Zellerbach Foundation and the Intersection for the Arts, but would not be possible without contributions from listeners like you. Good morning, good morning. Have we got a show for you today? Today's show, as always, is about maps, all kinds of maps. Maps that tell you where you are, maps that tell you where you should be, maps that tell the world how you see it, and maps that tell the world how you think about it. Maps are amazing. They're tools to help you make sense of a world that makes no sense. Or, as we'll hear from our first guest, they're tools to help you, as we say, jitter a world that makes a bit too much sense. My guest today is here with me in Studio 2A, all the way from Oxford, England. Dr. Laura Ewer is the Interdisciplinary Studies Program Director at Oxford University and has just come out with a new book entitled Drift, Are You Here? How Mapping Shows Us What We Are. Dr. Ewer, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Francis. It's a pleasure to be here.
That's a quote from your book, isn't it? It's a pleasure to be here.
You've caught me already, Francis. You know, I didn't even realize I'd said it. Isn't that remarkable? Well, it is a pleasure to be here, as it were. We use those terms so loosely, don't we? You are here. It's such an incredible phrase, and we find it on so many maps that we take it for granted. I like to think of it as a key to mapping, really, to getting us out of this connection between mapping and location. You are here. It could mean that you are located in this place. Simple enough, but that's only one way of looking at the phrase. Turn it around and you see that it could be defining the place. Here is you. That is to say that this place, this locale, is defined by you. What is a place without an inhabitant? Places are defined by human actions. They have meanings and functions and relationships, and without us, they might as well not exist.
If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around to hear it, that sort of thing?
Sure. But you can turn it around again if you want. You are here. That is to say, you are defined by this place, and isn't that true as well? Who we are is determined by context. At work, I'm a professor. At home, I'm a mother. On the bus, I'm just another silly bint, if you know what I mean.
Fascinating.
And we can keep going with this. It's not just an exercise in semantics, Francis. It tells us everything we need to know why mapping is so much more than just plotting streets. Think of are. In the Spanish, you have, of course, ser and estar. To be at the moment and to be permanently. We don't have this in English, but it applies here. If this is the permanent place of your identity, what happens when you are not here? If this is a temporary place, the statement is always true. You can always say to yourself, I am here.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Yes, right. And let us not forget the plural you, because maps are really about the relationships between people within a territory. We begin to lose the simplicity of the discrete self. Are we many selves or one? I could go on, but you see, when you begin to think this way, maps can unfold from the traditional Cartesian grid into a much more complex and revealing system.
Yes, I was so taken by the book when I read it, Dr. Ewer. This idea of drift, I'd never thought of it before.
Drift, Francis, is where it all happens. You see, there is a sheen of objectivity on every map. What a sham that is! Most maps are systematic tracings of the landscape embedded with hierarchies of information. It's a twofold system of control, neither of which are, as they appear to be, objective. On the one hand, the map encodes information. Big streets are wide and small streets are small. Scenic routes have green dotted lines and historic sites have little icons, that sort of thing. It's a system that is, hopefully, rigorous enough to generate a trustworthy field of information. On the other hand, it encodes a certain point of view about what matters and how it matters and what one thing matters more than what other one thing. The first method of control is the definition of the field of information and the means of determining the field. If I put every financial institution on the map, it creates a field of financial information. But who decides what is a financial institution? This map here shows all the banks, but what about the armored cars? What about the mattresses under which the poor keep their funds? Why is a household not considered a financial institution? So, you see, the field is defined and the highlights are defined, and this is generally the accepted understanding of the territory. The second layer of control is the parameters of the map. Why does the map start and stop here? Why does it have this scale? What day or week or year is this representing?
It's a static thing.
But we are not static. Drift, Francis, takes this into account. It is where we interface with the static of the map. We are the subjective users of that map, and in that, we are honest. We drift like a boat through a lake, causing whirls and eddies, anomalies, as it were. And those anomalies are the artifacts of our interactions with the seemingly objective world. The map of the city is static, but you and I are not static. We drift through the city and create all sorts of anomalies, and the places where those anomalies interact, more anomalies are created. Are you familiar with fluid dynamics?
You mean how water flows?
Yes, that. It is nearly impossible to calculate fluid dynamics in any great detail. We have to approximate based on patterns. In a Newtonian world, we can calculate two forces interfacing with one another. Add a third, and the equation becomes incredibly complex. Add a whole field, and you have no hope of calculating all the interactions. You make generalizations based on observations, then you reverse engineer what you need to discover.
And that's drift?
No. Drift is the interaction of the individual subjectivity with the field. I'm trying to say that you could never calculate it. We are so complex, we are incalculable. Yet we have this tool. We follow the effects of drift and see what's emergent, what patterns and relationships appear. And then we have a clue to the nature of the thing.
Of the thing?
Of anything. But more importantly, the nature of human interactions. If you follow 10 people, a group of friends, you can map the way their lives drift through the field of any map. Any map. And you will find an emergent pattern that is the nature of the friendship.
Why any map? Doesn't it have to be where these people spend time together, these friends?
Not at all. Because the nature of the friendship is this emergent quality. And the field of the map is like the water. A speedboat at a certain speed will always create a wake, right?
Yeah.
But some water is salty, and some is fresh, some is cold, and some is choppy. But you can always say, oh, that's the wake of a speedboat. So, you see, it is with these emergent patterns. You must have a field, but any field with the right general properties will do, as long as you are mapping the same things.
I don't know that I fully understand this, but it's fascinating. Could this be used in therapy?
I'm sorry?
In psychotherapy, couples therapy, really. I just imagine a therapist mapping a couple's relationship, defining the unhealthy patterns and then fixing them.
Well, I suppose it could. Actually, Francis, I've been working with a rabbi here in Brooklyn. It's why I'm in town this week. He's a Kabbalist, and he's got this theory that the soul is mappable.
Really?
Yes, that's right. You see, we all agree that a person is a system, a set of data, age, height, ethnicity, upbringing, weight, IQ, education, etc., etc. Advertisers understand this. They're brilliant at mapping us, you see. But we all object to this emotionally, but we do not really know why. It is because what they do not do is look for the anomalies. We are systems, you see. Rabbi Edelstein does not disagree with this, but he believes that when we interact with the field of information in the world, when we drift through it, or if it drifts through us, these whirls and eddies happen, these anomalies, and it is there that the soul enters. Life, he believes, is in the anomalies. Think of the Big Bang. It's an impossible condition to consider, an all-containing point mass with no outside. Then an anomaly happens. The perfection of the point is compromised by an anomaly. What drifted through what?
I can't imagine.
It is life, Francis. All of creation. Life is the anomaly. The result of drift through the data set.
Drift?
Drift.
But you've given me a lot to think about, Professor. I wish we had more time to get into the details, but I guess we'll have to go out and get the book and reread it. It's a dense one, but worth it. The book is called Drift. Are You Here? How mapping shows us what we are. There's so much in here. We didn't even get to the chapter about jittering and the fascinating stuff. Dr. Ewer will be signing books tonight at Barnes & Noble's on 82nd and Broadway. Don't miss it.
One more thing, if I may make another plug.
Of course.
My associate, Bjorn Stanje Ankre, will be down at the Gran Electrica Cafe for brunch at 10 o'clock this morning. Bjorn is a brilliant mapper, and he's there this morning if you're looking for something. If that's you, don't worry, it can be found. Ankre will be there to train people at using our mapping techniques. Seating is limited, as is Bjorn's time, so if you wish to find that thing, make sure you are there exactly at 10.
You heard it here. Be here at the Grand Electrica Cafe at exactly 10 o'clock. No earlier, no later. A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And that's our show for today. Please join us next Saturday morning when we talk with Jane Jacobs about sidewalks and her new book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities. Thanks again, Dr. Ewer.
Thank you.